Nice to be back this afternoon. With all of the civil unrest, the rioting, the looting, the protesting going on, the lack of contentment that we see, usually we see it in the world, but we see it a lot in this country lately. We've had some folks struggle with it where we live now, and so I found this old sermon from 20, 25 years ago. I thought I'd touch it up and tweak it a little bit and put it on PowerPoint and revisit some of these points. And I'm glad I did because it's helped me. So for a while this afternoon, we want to talk about contentment. We'll take a reading from Proverbs 15, verse 16. And it's a pretty simple message. This verse is, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. In other words, the more you have, the more trouble it is to keep up with it. And when you compare it to what you have by fearing the Lord, well, even if you have little, you're better off without more. We want to look at this and try to balance things out and apply it to our lives. But before we do, we'd like to approach God again in prayer. So again, we ask you to humble yourself as we pray. Just As I Am will be the invitation song this afternoon. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than to have great treasure and all the trouble that comes with it. I suppose everybody who lives long enough will know someone or has known someone who just never seemed to be content in life. Just never happy, never at ease, never at peace, never happy with what they have. And sometimes it may be somebody's position in life that causes the discontent. Sometimes it's a personal goal that has yet to be achieved. Sometimes it's feelings of insecurity or a lack of self-esteem that maybe someone has always struggled with, doesn't know how to deal with. But many times in life, discontentment with a lot of folks has a lot to do with the accumulation of things, the accumulation of wealth and riches. And you probably remember a song that starts out like this. Men strive for the wealth of this wide, wicked world. They seek after honor and fame. So lavishly sporting their diamonds and pearls, they put the dear Savior to shame. It's true. We all would like to get ahead. We all strive to do better in this world and become more comfortable in life. But there comes a point where the accumulation of treasure brings so much trouble with it that a person can lose respect or fear for God as you become bogged down with added troubles and additional responsibilities. There is such a thing as too much. Now, some folks would tell you, no, there's no such thing. When I have more, I want more. But there is such a thing as too much. And we can find ourselves as discontent and unhappy as we've ever been, even back when we had next to nothing. And so the writer of Proverbs tells us here, we're actually better off to have less if having more brings so much trouble with it that you lose respect for God. Outside of Midland, I want to say it's to the northwest, but there's a huge metal building and people drive by it all the time and wonder, what is inside that thing? Well, one day I was at work and somebody there shared some information with me that they had. They knew the owner of the building. And they told me that inside this building are over 100 Corvettes. This was 15 years ago. Today, the car has been in production for 67 years. But 15 years ago, he would have had to have had about two for each year model. And he had them in this building. He had three full-time employees taking care of the cars, changing the oil, keeping the tires aired up, keeping them running, keeping the batteries up, keeping up with the registration and the inspections and the insurance. Any one of them, anybody could walk in there and drive anyone at any moment legally. Now, a lot of people in Midland would tell you, well, that's his money, that's his business, good for him, all the power to him. But look at it this way. Let's say tomorrow you decide you're going to go to the grocery store. And you walk outside or you walk to your garage or your carport, as the case may be, and you look for your daily driver, and instead of one vehicle, there's 100 of them to pick from. Would it take you very long to think, you know, this is overkill? It's the added trouble of taking care of all this is not worth having them. Well, in 3 John verse 2, the Apostle John was writing to a man named Gaius. He said, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers." Now, he's telling him, you already prosper spiritually, just as your soul is already prospering. But he says, I'm praying this for your behalf. I pray that your health would be prosperous as well, that you prosper physically. But also notice this. He says, I pray that you may prosper in all things. All things? That includes financially. Is it wrong to want to do better in life? No. Is it wrong to want to have more in life? No. Is it wrong to want to prosper financially? No. But there is a point where it can get in the way of our spiritual livelihood. You've heard people discuss how to balance things out in life, how to find a happy medium and stay there, how to reach a point of contentment. Well, contentment is something you get from your own personal mental state. It really is. It's not dependent upon physical accumulations. If you're looking for contentment in life, you got to look up here. You're not going to find it out there. A lot of people can tell you, including myself, it's not out there. It's up here. It's not dependent upon accumulations. It's one of those things that involve a lot of life's decisions in order to handle life's struggles and life's problems. You know, employers usually allow their employees to have some time off, give them a vacation time, because they understand it's important for people to have some balance in their lives. You work hard for a long period of time, you get a break. And it's good to be able to balance the issues of life. And balancing things out as we progress through life and as we gain more and more and do better in life and remaining content the whole time we're doing all this, no matter what state we find ourselves in, keeping that balance is a major priority in a Christian's life. Now, in Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 and 11, it reads like this, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity, or you lacked the ability. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." The Apostle Paul here, writing to the church of Philippi, says, I'm glad for you that you're doing better and your care for me has flourished again, that you're able to help me more if you want to. But there was a time when you lacked opportunity. You know, sometimes that describes us. We have concern for others, but sometimes we struggle to find the opportunity to show it. Something gets in the way, like a pandemic, for example. And then when we do manage to find the time, well, people are very receptive and very appreciative. We had a brother that spent 9 months in the hospital in Arlington. He was a bit on the cranky side before that happened. When he finally got out and I saw him at church, he was completely different. He was very, very happy. He treated everybody very respectfully and very nice. He was very appreciative just to be there. And sometimes we learn things like that from life. But he states here also, I have learned to be content in whatever state I am in, whatever the circumstances may be. That tells us something very important there, doesn't it? Contentment in life is a learned condition. I wish I could say, I was born with this, but I can't. If I'm content, it's something that I have learned in life. Paul tells the church in Philippi, I'm glad you're concerned about me, but let me tell you, I've learned to get by on less. But then again, on those occasions when I've had more than I needed, it doesn't change me. It hasn't changed me. Whatever condition I am in, I've learned to handle it and to stay happy. I do not change when circumstances change for the better or for the worse. In other words, contentment in life is a learned condition. If you had told me during lunch that you learned yesterday that a long-lost uncle of yours had left you $1 million. You never knew him, but you found this information out yesterday. I would have been very, very happy for you. But you know what would have made me even more happy than that? Is knowing that despite this good fortune, you're still the same person. You're still a Christian. You still follow the Lord. You still obey God. You're still interested in the Word of God. You still go to church. You still pray. You still read your Bible. Something good happened, but you're the same. Some people have trouble handling success in life. It changes them for the worst. Just like some people have trouble handling failure in life. It changes them for the worse. But Paul's saying, whatever state I'm in, if things are good, if things are not good, I am content. And I've learned to be that way. Your circumstances may change, but we should not. A man was expressing his frustration one day. For years and years, he wanted something very, very badly. Finally, he was able to get it. And you know what he discovered after he got it? He figured out that he never had really wanted it to begin with. He just thought he did. And then when he get it, it did nothing for him. And he realized, why did I want this? Well, really, I never did want it. I just thought I did. Being content can be a tricky thing in life if we allow it to be. What is contentment anyway? How would you define contentment? Well, we want to look at Mark, a couple of things that happened in the New Testament, a couple of events. The first one in Mark 15 and 15, it says here, so Pilate, wanting to gratify or content the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. Now, you remember the scene? Pilate had Jesus before these people. And he wanted to know, what shall I do with the man? And he brought up Barabbas, a man who had been found guilty of murder and extortion, and said, under the law, I can release one of them. You tell me, which one should I release? And they said, release Barabbas, crucify Jesus. And so, willing to content the crowd, he did the wrong thing. He wanted to make them happy. It was the wrong thing to do, but it made them happy. When the Bible tells us to be content, it's another way of telling us to be happy. Be happy with life. Be satisfied with life. If life is good, handle it well, but don't let it make you worse. If life is not so good, handle it well, but don't let it make you worse. Don't lose respect for God. If you discover, if you figure out that you are losing respect for God in your life, watch out. You're changing for the worse. Some people, again, they can't handle success because they feel that, well, I don't need God anymore. Things are going great. And so they become a little arrogant in their approach to things. Some people cannot handle failure. They begin to feel, well, God doesn't need me. Look what's going on in my life. He's allowing this to happen, surely. Both scenarios are not true. And let me tell you this, and take this with you this week. No matter how much we succeed in life or how often we fail in life, we always need God, and He always needs us. That's something that we need to remind ourselves about. Yes, God needs me, and I need Him. And the other incident I wanted to reference is found in Luke 3, verse 14. Likewise, the soldiers asked Jesus, saying, "And what shall we do?" He was privy to something that had been going on among them, and they asked Him, "What shall we do?" So He said to them, "Here's what you do. Do not intimidate anyone or accuse falsely," which they had been doing, "and be content with your wages." Now, this is some practical advice that Jesus gave to some soldiers who were having a problem with greed. They were letting it control them. And it reached a point where they were lying about other people in order to position themselves where they could extort money by intimidating people, by accusing people falsely. They could extort money in an effort to get ahead of each other. They have this competition going on among themselves. They're trying to outdo each other financially. And they were resorting to dishonest gain to achieve this. They weren't happy with their wages, so they were willing to be dishonest to get more money. And it's interesting. In order to find contentment in life, Jesus tells them, be happy with your wages. Don't you know people who could benefit from hearing that today? You know, over the decades, I've worked with people off and on who would go to incredible lengths, who would go out of their way to find out what their co-workers made. They believed, and it's probably true to a large extent, that nobody makes the same thing. So I want to know what everybody else is making. I want to know who makes more than me. I want to know who makes less than me. And on occasion, somebody would be successful in learning about the wages of others. They'd ask the right person and find a way to persuade them to share that information with them. And whenever that happened, whenever somebody acquired information like this, one of two things would take place, and neither were any good. Both were bad. Number one, people would find out that they made more than others, and they would think more highly of themselves than they ought to think, as the Bible tells us not to do. They become a little arrogant. Or number two, people would feel less about themselves than they should because they find out their co-workers make more than them. Neither one were any good. And as we look at these two scenarios, we can draw these two quick conclusions, or these two results of our study here that would help us, you might say. Number one, in Mark 15 and 15, that tells us, don't do the wrong thing to content others. In Luke 3, that tells us, don't do the wrong thing to content yourself. Because you'll be sorry if you did. Jesus tells his soldiers, instead of being concerned about the wages of others, be happy with yours. You know, there's been times in my life where I needed to make more. It was really a challenge to pay the bills. And it was hard not to feel resentful that I would be doing a certain occupation and not be able to pay the bills. But then at the same time, even though you know this can eventually swing in your favor, it takes a while to happen. So what do you do in the meantime? You have to find a way to be content in your circumstance. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, we want to read verses 5 through 10. Useless wranglings or disputings, another translation says, of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain, from such withdraw yourself. Avoid people who believe this. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain. That's what gain really is. And he calls it great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. How many people could benefit from hearing that? Having food and clothing, be happy. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a spiritual snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which spiritually drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. How would you like to be described like that? How would you like one day to look in the mirror and realize, I have pierced myself through with many sorrows in my life? I wish I hadn't done that. Some, he says, will use godliness as a means of financial gain. In other words, they don't serve God because they really want to, out of love. They do it solely for wealth. Somehow it's tied to money. Our encouragement is, don't ever place money alongside of godliness, thinking that one leads to the other. Because it doesn't work that way. One causes the other. In fact, stay away from people who do that. You remember Simon the sorcerer in Acts chapter 8? He tried to purchase the ability to perform miracles with money. And do you remember what Peter said to the man? He told him, your money will perish with you. And of course, Simon was immediately penitent about that and asked for Peter to pray for him, and he did. Money does not bring true contentment in life, and we certainly cannot buy our way into heaven. On April 12th of this year, a good friend of mine, and most of you knew him, he died from the COVID disease, Art Eastman. Art was a multi-millionaire. He didn't take a penny of it with him. He left this world the same way he came into it, without owning a single thing. He did not even own the clothes that he was buried in. They didn't belong to him anymore. His spirit had returned to God who gave it. He wasn't there at his funeral. And that's something that a lot of people struggle with. They work so hard to gain so much, and their attitude is, no one else is ever going to have this. Wrong. Because everything that you own, that you buy, that's given to you, that you possess, that you have, that you inherit from someone, one of these days is going to belong to somebody else. Or it just won't exist anymore. A lot of folks who have been accustomed to having a lot struggle thinking about that. Money does not bring contentment in life, not true contentment, and we certainly can't buy our way into heaven like some people think you can buy anything. But godliness with contentment is great gain. So there it is. How do we find contentment in life? We follow after things, we do things, we speak things, and we live lives that are godly, because godliness with contentment is great gain. I've I've ran across a saying I wanted to include here. I'm going to put it up on the screen and just read it to you and let this sink in. This is really good. When we cannot find contentment within ourselves, it is useless to seek it elsewhere. Wow. How true that is. When you cannot find contentment in here, you're wasting your time looking for it elsewhere. There's a verse, it's one of my favorite verses that I've ever read. It's in the book of Job, 22, verse 21. And I'm going to put it up on the screen as well. And here's what it says. Now acquaint yourself with God and be at peace. Thereby, what's going to happen? Good will come to you. Living a godly life makes you content. Being close to God, talking often to God, getting to know God brings contentment in life. It really does. What else did Paul say? For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. Again, that's not the easiest thing for some to accept. But think about it this way. What if you could take it with you? What if you could empty your bank account and have all the money stuck in your coffin, or have all your jewelry placed beside your body, or the documents to whatever you may own, the titles and so forth, and you could take it with you? What if you could? When you get to heaven, would it be useful? No. Would it do you any good? No. Can you use it? No. Is it worth anything? No. This is physical. Where we're going is spiritual. It doesn't fit in. It won't work there. So even if you could take it with you, it would be useless. And then something that usually gets our attention, and having food and raiment, with these we shall be content. Having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Isn't it true? I mean, if we're honest about it, if we're really honest, we have more than we need. Yeah, we do. How would you summarize that? Well, I see it as something very simple. I'll put it this way. Be happy with what you have, not unhappy for what you don't have. And this can be a very challenging proposition for us every day that we live. But we can do that. And it makes such a difference in our lives whenever we reach that point of spiritual maturity. He says also, those who do desire to be rich, and he's talking about the kind of people, that's all they think about, that's all they do. They fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. Perdition means eternal damnation. You see what it can lead to? Those who desire to be rich fall into this spiritual temptation, a spiritual snare, foolish and harmful lusts. Spiritually, it drowns people in destruction and eternal damnation. That doesn't sound attractive at all, does it? Words like these are not words we want to be associated with, to describe us in life. We don't want any part of that, but that's the road that you're looking at traveling, and that's the road that being consumed with wanting to be rich leads people down. And really, if we're honest about it, we are rich. We have more than we need. We want to prosper, but we don't want that. Living a godly life helps us keep things in perspective and helps us balance out the issues in life. Finally, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from in the faith They've left the church going after money. In their greediness, they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. It's not money. It's not money that's the root of all evil. It's the love of money. You see, that is described as the root of all kinds of evil. And you know, it always seems to be the common denominator of evil activity. A lot of times in life, you hear about something going on in the world where all these things happened and all these reasons were given that it happened. But if you drill down to the root cause of it, most of the time you'll find it was the love for money that spurred everything else on top of it. Oh, it's this reason, it's that reason. No, it's the love of money. That's the root cause. And it's caused some, he says, to turn from God. It's caused some of the brotherhood to pierce themselves through with a lot of trouble, a lot of sorrows. And again, it's not something we want in our lives. And so we have this warning. So as we get close to bringing our message to a close, we'll summarize here. We are encouraged to prosper in life. Yes, we are. Health-wise, financially, and spiritually. It's not wrong to want to better yourself financially. And the apostle prayed that that others would profit health-wise, just as we profit spiritually already. We are told that contentment in life is a learned condition. We're taught that. Godliness with contentment is great gain. The book of Job, acquaint yourselves with God to be at peace. Good will come to you. You ever hear somebody say, well, you need to get acquainted with God. Well, that's what they're talking about. Somebody needs to be at peace. Get acquainted with God, and things will just work out. Two things are certain we noticed. Number one, we brought nothing into this world, and we're leaving the same way. We're carrying nothing out from this world. What else? Be happy with what you have, not unhappy for what you don't have. Growing up, my parents would spend their 2 weeks of vacation every summer doing the same thing. Went to Arkansas to see my grandparents on my mom's side, back in the sticks in the hills of Arkansas. And I watched as they gathered eggs, milked their cows, churned their own butter. Grandpa would hook up the mules and a handheld plow and plow his vegetable garden. Year after year, they would do this. If they needed meat, he'd take a .22 and go off in the woods and bring home meat or go fishing. My brother and I loved it because we would go exploring and get ourselves tangled up in poison ivy and poison oak and get scratched up, but we loved it. We had fun. But one day, as I got older, I became aware of all the innovations available in the world. And we went there one summer and I told my grandparents, look, there are things available in the world that can make your life a lot easier. And you know what they told me? They said, we don't want to hear about it. We're happy just the way we are. We're happy just the way things are. Well, you haven't seen, well, we don't care. We don't want to know. And that stuck with me all this time. And that taught me in itself that it's not the things that make you happy. If you want to be content, you have to work on it up here, you see. What else did we notice? Contentment is not the fulfillment of what you want. It's the appreciation of what you have. Wow. That speaks volumes, doesn't it? Not the fulfillment of what you want, but the appreciation of what you have. And also, another bullet under this point. If you know that enough is enough, you will always have enough. You don't have to get more to be content. You can be content right now. Is it wrong to want more? No. You just have to keep things in perspective. A while back, I I went to my hometown, a small town, Sweetwater, most of you know where that is. I went there to run a 5K race, and while I was there, there was a fellow at the race that was a high school acquaintance of mine. He was a few years older, and he stayed there in town, and he ran the radio station, so he was popular. Everyone liked him, and everyone knew his voice, knew what he looked like, who he was. And I asked him, have you thought about retiring anytime soon? He goes, well, yeah, I thought about it several years ago, but I just can't do it. Why not? He said, I love being a big fish in a small pond. Really? Yeah, if I retired, I'd move to a big city and nobody would know me. I'd be a nobody there. Well, if you know that enough is enough, you will always have enough. Lust for worldly riches can destroy a person's life. And remember the descriptions? These words, temptation, snare, drowning in destruction and perdition, foolish, harmful lust, are given as warnings. Money is not the root of evil, but the love of it is. I have another picture I wanted to share with you as we get ready to close. It's a picture of a tree, believe it or not. Very unusual setting. You have this tree set in the middle of a large body of water, growing on a small piece of earth visible above the waterline. And here it is. The tree appears to be very prosperous, very healthy, doing very well. Small piece of land seems to be very fertile. The word contentment is on the picture underneath the tree. And I can't help but look at this and apply it to people's lives. Because here we are in the world, we're like this tree. We're right in the middle of a huge world, is huge to us anyway, and we occupy a very small space. We own a few things. We own a small piece of real estate. But like the tree, we can be very healthy. We can prosper very well. We can do just fine. You don't have to be a big fish in a small pond to be happy. You can be a little fish, a small fish, in a huge ocean and still be content, which is what this picture illustrates. Well, as I said, this has been very helpful to me, and I thought perhaps it would be to you as well. We'll extend the invitation at this point. If there is any spiritual need that anyone has, we invite you to come forward, make known your need, and we'll attend to you as you have need. We'll ask you to stand as together we sing.